is the question of the right to vote. Again, the prejudice is very, very strong against women voting. Certainly in the music hall in the 1860s and the 1870s, you only had to mention the question women wanting to vote, and everybody laughed. It was an easy joke. Let's talk about women voting, and that would be extremely funny. This is not so old. If you imagine, certainly in the 1970s, okay, it's a long time ago, 30 years ago when I was young, the idea of homosexuals getting married, everybody thought that was extremely funny. That was only 30 years ago, whereas today it's part of public debate. It's something which is publicly debated and considered to be reasonable by many people. So very, very strong prejudices. Even in 1920, the Prime Minister said, women are ignorant of politics, credulous to the last degree, and flickering with gusts of sentiments like candles in the wind. Okay, so c'est le Premier ministre qui dit en 1920 que les femmes ne savent rien de la politique, qu'elles sont crédules ou absolument crédules, et comment est-ce qu'on dirait ça, elles changent d'avis avec des vents de sentiments, tout comme des bougies dans le vent, quoi. Completely impossible for them to have. Let me give you in English. I can't translate it. Women are ignorant of politics, credulous to the last degree, and flickering with gusts of sentiments like candles in the wind. Okay, yeah, you get the impression. The famous supporters of the right to vote, naturally, are the suffragettes. And we will be talking about them, not today, we will be talking about them later, because that mostly begins in 1902. But they were not the only ones. They were the ones that history has remembered, or the television has remembered, because it was very spectacular. Yeah, the hunger strikes, window breaking, burning down people's houses, and things like that. That was the suffragettes in the 1904 to 1914, mostly. But it goes back a lot further. Remember that, first of all, at this period, a lot of men cannot vote. And we sometimes make a distinction between suffragettes and suffragists. The suffragette is the energetic, spectacular, direct action movement of Edwardian England, breaking windows, burning pillarboxes, and so on. And the suffragist is the more respectable campaigns, demonstrations, meetings, petitions. It's a little bit like the physical force and the moral force, in a way. However, in reality, the division must not be simplified. Many suffragettes were also in the suffragist movement. And many suffragists were also, there's a lot of mixing up there. So let's go back to the beginning of them. First of all, the very, very beginning, 1851 in Sheffield. Sheffield, industrial town in the north of England, was the place where there was the first organisation, the Sheffield Association for Female Franchise. Notice, it's not an accident that the first organisation appears not in London, not in Oxford or Cambridge, but in an industrial town in the north. Yeah, that's the sort of place that it started off. And in 1866, with the help of John Stuart Mill, a bigger organisation was established, the Kensington Society. It's an awful class, at Kensington. The Kensington Society was established demand rights for women, and it's under the influence of these women that John Stuart Mill suggested that there be an amendment to the Reform Act that would give women the same political rights as men. Note that this amendment was defeated by 196 votes to 73. Now that's interesting, so it's obviously a very easy defeat. On the other hand, there were 73 members of Parliament who thought it was reasonable for women to have the same rights as men. This is interesting because 20 years before, how many members of Parliament wanted to discuss the Chartists on a very, 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 very small. So in 1866, you're still talking about
certainly during the bill, you're still talking about not giving the vote to all the classes. And so there were a significant minority who were prepared to go as far as women. One of the difficulties they had... Oh, sorry. So after this, you got the London Society for Women's Suffrage, the Manchester Society for Women's Suffrage, etc. You've got a series of campaigning organisations around the country. One of the difficulties that they had is that many liberals or progressives or radicals said, well, there's a problem. Women are more conservative than men. This is what their opinion was at the time. So if we give the same vote to women, then the Conservatives will win all the time. And this is totally untrue. And until the 1980s, more women voted Conservative than men in Britain, partly because... As a general rule, a section of women were staying at home with the children, and it doesn't seem to make people very radical staying at home with the children somehow. I can understand why. And so that was one of the arguments you used. 1874, you got the first big link with the trade unions. There was the suffragist women linked with the trade unions. Yes, there was an alliance established in 1874. So this is interesting. So it was possible for some cooperation to go on. And slowly, these organizations continued campaigning for many years, yeah? 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, and before forming in 1887, than the National Union of Women's Suffrage Societies, led by Lydia Becker and later led by Millicent Fawcett. This is an organization which fights for the rights of votes for women. And of course, they held public meetings, organized petitions, published newspapers. Again, newspapers are very, very important here. And they also got involved in different political campaigns. For example, they worked to help establish trade unions for low paid women workers, etc. And in 1888, one of their successes is that the Trade Union Congress accepts that women should have equal pay. It doesn't happen for a long time, but sorry, in 1888, another 8 there. The trade unions say, okay, yes, it's true, we support the idea of equal pay. However, remember the opposition. Remember some of the opposition. Let's look at Beatrice Webb. Beatrice Webb, one of the great leaders of the socialist movement, the social democratic movement, the Fabians, a left-wing woman, and she signs a statement with a large group of women in 1889, which says, "We believe the emancipation process has now reached the limits fixed by the physical constitution of women." That is to say that they signed to say women are biologically incapable of having the vote and being involved in the political process. So you're having this group of women, some of them, a few of them, left-wing women, saying, no, it's not correct. We don't want the vote for women because women are not capable. They are limited by their biology. And that shows really how powerful the prejudices were, because even a left-wing woman who was a writer, who was an intellectual, could be persuaded by this group. Of course, most left-wing women did not have this position, but there was this possibility. And for many years, there are petitions and bills in Parliament for women's votes. Very, very long process. Queen Victoria is completely opposed, of course. Queen Victoria talks about this mad, wicked folly of women's rights. Yeah, the mad, wicked folly. So it's the fou et ses méchants. It's the mad and wicked. And this campaign will become a mass campaign. In 1894, The petition has 250,000 signatures. A petition to Parliament in 1894 asking for votes for women will have 250,000 signatures. So now this is 94, yeah, in 1894. So we already have 30 years of campaigning. Yeah, it's a lot of you have to be very patient to campaign for 30 years. And I'm not going to continue because then we get to 1900 and there's another class in a few weeks' time about after 1900. I'm just going to go on to the last one, number four, which is the question of